Okay, I see many people are already on the call, and it's 12 UTC, so maybe we can start. So welcome everyone. Have I received any apologies?
No apologies received.
No apologies received, which means that others will join us on the go. So we'll start with our slides for Abu Dhabi then. Kim, may I ask you to show them on the screen? On the screen. You can see them. As you know, we have, to give an update to the community. And these are the first slides. What we've done between the meetings, starting from Johannesburg to Abu Dhabi. So first we have one new guideline, still not processed properly. It's about, again I mixed it up a little bit. So this is the first draft. It's IPR community. I didn't mix it up. Yeah. So this is for the position that Martin is now currently occupying. So this is a new guideline, but we haven't processed it properly yet, but it's a new one. Then we have three guidelines updated. First, control responsibility. So we updated it because of the situation we had in Marrakesh. What is Marrakesh? Yeah, I think it was Marrakesh. Oh, sorry, not Marrakesh. I have forgotten all the meetings. First meeting of the year was where? Please remind me, before Johannesburg. Hope you're not sleeping. Wake up. Where was the meeting before Johannesburg? Copenhagen. Yes, right. I thought it was somewhere in Europe. Yes, Copenhagen. In Copenhagen, we had elections in chair and vice chair, and for the first time we had contested election from one region, and it called for some changes, and we used the opportunity and updated it even further. Then I worked on council election procedure. It was updated, but current election process is run by the previous guideline, not the old one, still in force. And crowdfunding. Then in progress, we work on this rejection action. Today we'll be going to discuss in more detail. And this is one IRP, the one I mixed up after the first one. IPR and IRP give me some headache and helps me to. Well, as I keep mixing them up. So IRP is in progress. We have first draft from David. Not entirely clear what we are expected to do. Yes, exactly, David. IPR, IRP. Sounds very similar to me. Okay, next one. About travel funding guideline. Yeah, so we the proposal. Yes, David.
Thanks, Katrina. David McCullough here. I was just going to mention on the IRP matter, we are awaiting action from ICANN legal and policy with respect to next steps to picking a standing panel. As soon as I get that information, which may actually be at ICANN 60, I should be able to help us walk through what the CCNSO should be doing with respect to the administrative functions of setting up the IRP. But I'm sort of dead in the water waiting for some additional information out. But I hope that helps. Thanks.
Yes, thank you very much, David. Okay, let's wait for item 60. And it's not far. It's not that we have to wait so long. So let's move forward about travel funding. So the main changes in travel funding guidelines that we have solid funding criteria, something that the travel funding committee could use while they evaluate applications. And here, as you can see, the GRC offered to test. And actually, I must tell you that the CCNSO Council, its last call last week on Thursday, agreed to give it a try, and travel funding committee will be asked to use the criteria and to do something, field testing, and see how they work. Okay, so next for next period, I think from Abu Dhabi to San Juan. So we still need to update the council roles and responsibilities. So the idea is to add these new roles of our action manager and approval action manager and then rejection action manager. The idea is to appoint them again every year, just as we do with other positions. And this is the answer to you, Martin. You asked why we need to appoint them every year. We could perhaps appoint them for a longer period. We do appointments on a yearly basis. We appoint chair, vice chairs, and the travel funding committee and all other committees. We appoint them on a yearly basis. So probably there's no... why would action managers be in different? They also should be appointed on a yearly basis during the first face-to-face meeting of the year. I think it's quite logical. We have appointed this. Again, we need to again update the guideline on nomination process to ICANN board seat, because currently the current the current election process showed some that we need to include some more more information into the guidelines, at least to the call for nominations. Of course, people need to understand what are the requirements for ICANN board members. We need to work on a new guideline, customer standing committee charter, we need procedures, apparently we need to do it regularly, and at some point we will need guidelines. Then we still continue working on rejection actions, we definitely need it by January. Hopefully we will manage to have it out to the community for public comments and then discuss it with the council. So by January it should be, I think middle January it should be already adopted. Still working on that, as you heard, just updating David, IRP. And most probably we'll need to update guidelines, business and nominations to specific review teams, because a lot of due to the operating standards to be published last week. Here we have about some information about operating standards. Hopefully by the meeting we'll have more information, because there will be a cross-community session on operating standards will be held on Monday, which is the day before our meeting starts, the day before we have to give the update. So hopefully we'll have some more information on that. And we also prepare for the CCNSO review, and this is something that probably we'll start discussing today, but this is clearly the topic for our face-to-face meeting in Abu Dhabi. I hope I've covered most of the work is done. Is there anything else you think we should mention during the update? Anything? Okay, David does not have any ideas to add. And for Stephen, it's also okay. So, since there are no other comments, then let's move to the next agenda item. And that's rejection action procedures. So, as you saw, we have one version. Yeah, Stephen prepared the draft guidelines, was sent to the group to comment. We received the comment from Martin. Thank you very much, Martin. Then there will be some restructuring activities by Bart. But this I probably will give floor to Stephen to introduce the draft. So, Stephen.
Good morning. Quite simply, what Bart and I tried to do at Bart's initiative was to remove some of the repetition in Section 4, particularly 4.3 and 4.2. And he took the initiative on this and did the actual legwork with regards to the restructuring of the document that is currently up and about. I'd like to take it this week and clean it so we have a properly renumbered and readable version that we can discuss next week at our face-to-face for those of us who will be there. Given that Bart did the legwork on this, I think I'll turn it over to Bart, who can discuss this particular drawing that's up in front of us now, which is basically a visual that shows how the restructuring has occurred. Bart, I give it to you.
Yeah, thank you, Steve. And I just shared it this morning that you may have seen the say the one with all the text and the references to the text in the guideline. This is a similar diagram to show you the basic structure that we think makes it easier to read and to avoid some repetition. So the starting point is the board notice, then the CC community, so the CCTLD community, prepares a rejection action petition that is one leg, assume this will get adopted, etc., and that's referred in, I think it's section 4.3 or 4.4 of the document right now. Then the council needs to seek support from other decisional participants, and that if they find some, that will end up in a supported rejection action petition. And the core of the whole argument is, and the restructuring is, is that the supported rejection action petition is effectively the starting point for the community forum and for the decision making. Say the other leg is that in other SO or AC or another decisional participant, to be fair, initiates the process, so someone within or from that decisional participant submits a rejection action petition, gets approved, and that decisional, other decisional participant seeks support for its rejection action petition, including to the CCNSO. And assume the CCNSO supports it or somebody else, it ends up in a supported rejection action petition. And again, that is the community forum, and that leads up to the CCNSO decision-making on the suggestion, rejection action petition. So keep in mind, so I tried to do it this morning to capture the A4 and make it a little bit neater. I think it captures it, and it shows you the basic structure of the updated version of the version 4, that is, of the guideline. As a result, say, you can say that the language around the rescinding the support from during the community forum period for one of the supported rejection action petition is deleted in one part of the leg, and it's just needed for this bit. So that's why there is a little bit of reshuffling in the CCNSO decision-making on the rejection action petition. That's similar. So this reflects the restructuring of the document a little bit. And I think, but that's, yeah, looking at the different versions, it also makes it easier to explain to the broader community how the structure of the, say, especially of Section 4 of the guideline, how it works, and the underlying structure of the document. And also, and that's for future, where the different decision points are. You can now see that effectively at the end of each of these blocks, there is a decision needed from the CCNSO Council and or CCNSO Council with the CCNSO membership. That's it. I hope it clarifies a little bit what Stephen and I have been doing and discussing. Any questions? And back to you, Stephen.
Thank you, Bart. So that's basically the restructuring in a nutshell. I think it's an improvement. I can also report that work is continuing on the glossary and also on the what I would call the guidebook, quote-unquote, although I hate that word in an ICANN context, for how a community member needs to structure the rejection petition so it can be properly considered by the CNSO and the council and the steps that they need to do long before the board notice arrives at our doorstep, if indeed they have an issue with something the board is about to do. That's about. I should have both of those available for circulation at the face-to-face. And that's about it for me. Thank you.
Stephen,
thank you very
much,
Stephen. Thanks, Bart.
Kim, could you produce the draft guideline number version 4 for a minute? And scroll to the, let me scroll through, so bear with me for a moment. I just want to check whether, there we are. Say, up till now, we have included the roles and responsibilities table or diagram at the end of a guideline. In this case, and again, based on a discussion between Stephen and me, I've included just for testing. It's scrollable for everybody. Please go to page 6 and 7. But page 7 is probably the most clear example. What my suggestion would be, given this is a very complex guideline, and given that, say, a lot of actors are involved, that in order to clarify who has a role, when, and in what phase, we start already using and including these tables with roles and assignments, and maybe just a brief description of the task at each of the subsections, and so that at the end, say this could be consolidated in a general overview, but at least it makes it easier, almost as a kind of checklist for people to understand what is happening, but also for all the actors involved. So again, this is a suggestion. I've circulated this. Stephen hasn't seen it. before, but say that's what we discussed. Stephen, I see your hands up.
Thank you, Bart. Yeah, actually, I took a look at this over the weekend, and I do like this this proposal of yours to split this up so that we can see who needs to do what when. I actually have a question from Martin Boyle, because, Martin, one of your comments you made, for instance, can we work in more specific references to the bylaws, so we identify more clearly in this guideline what is something that is more of a policy, this is what the CCNSO should do kind of thing, versus this is a requirement of the bylaw and here's the section in the bylaw that requires this. And my question for you is, we could do it via text, I could also do it via footnotes. The downside of the footnotes, of course, is it gets kind of cluttered up. But the upside of the footnotes is we can produce versions of the draft without the footnotes, so we can just read it cleanly. And I was wondering if you have a preference or have some thoughts as to how I could go forward on that. Thank you.
Martin.
Thanks, Katrina. Actually, frankly, Stephen, I think I have no preferences one way or another. For me, the important thing is that when our successors come to read this document, where they can see an obligation on us, they can go back and see exactly what that obligation is. And I think that can be done equally well within a footnote or within the text. And I can see advantages and disadvantages as you just described them for both methods. For me, what was actually quite important was to say, when we're doing something, this is why we're doing it, rather than having somebody saying, well, you know, where in the bylaws is it, and having to hunt through for that text. For example, the one that was left on the screen when we got back scroll control was 3.3.1. And that had very specifically a reference in the text, which says what it is and then gives the direct reference to the bylaws, and that's what I thought was important, but that could equally well have been a footnote as far as I'm concerned. Thanks.
Thank you, Martin.
Katrina, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here. Okay, I just said, thank you. Thank you, Martin. Bart.
Yes, this alludes to a comment from Martin as well. So I started to include responses, and then I thought, it's not my role in life to respond to Martin's questions. So, but what I've done is, if you would scroll to page 19 and 20, you'll see, and 21, you'll see Martin's comments to make it easier. One of his final comments is around the role of the chair and the bylaws, etc. So what I did, and this is at the bottom of page 18, and is more a question of Martin whether this would address his concern around it. His suggestion, I've taken on board his suggestion that the chair would decide on a way forward, but in, say, 5.2 and 5.3, I've added the language, although it's a bit just for clarification. I think it's not really needed, but it clarifies for the reader what the relationship between the ICANN bylaws and this guideline is, that in all cases, no matter what, the bylaws remain paramount. And the reason for asking this now is because it nicely touches upon, say, Martin's comments relating to, say, the references to the bylaws, include them in a footnote or a text, but at least make very clear what is bylaw language and what is guideline language, so you know what is paramount. The first question is, Martin, does this address your concern around the, say, the omission and unreason, the role of the chair and the relationship between the bylaws and the guidelines?
Thanks, Bart. Yes, I think it does, because the way it's now worded, it simply says that when there's a conflict, it's the bylaws that take precedence, which, as far as I'm concerned, is entirely right. What I was rather more concerned about was just really the way that the text in the original version said, because that was the guidelines not providing guidance, or the impact unreasonable, and then it's the chair of the council will decide, and it was that just left you with a sort of a hanging, but what does the chair decide? now it's actually quite clear that the council has got to make a decision as to whether the guidelines have to be ignored in that case because they are in contradiction of the guideline, of the bylaws, and that suits me down to the ground. I think that's exactly right. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I have several comments here as well. We have this clause in every guideline, or this in case of blah blah blah, the chair of the CPs or council will decide. Since there are questions about the application of practical implementation of this clause, so I just had an idea that maybe we should have some guidance for the chair and something that could explain to the community how this clause should be used in practice. That's one of the ideas. So, yeah, to have a document explaining what chair's responsibilities and rights in case something goes wrong and the chair needs to step in and take a decision on the application of the guidelines. So that's one idea. Second one is about the when we include the reference to articles, specific articles in the bylaws, quite worried about that because bylaws may change and I'm sure we will forget in which guidelines we have which references, and so it is that I'll start going through the guidelines and we'll try to pick up out all those references we have so that we have a table with all the guidelines and all the references in case something changes in documents outside our scope of our guidelines, so then we can revisit the guideline but we do not refer only to NXD, we refer to all possible articles in the guidelines. So just compile a list and see where we have any references to other documents. And the last one is about this responsibility assignment matrix. Currently, in all the in all other guidelines, we use this approach usually used by in compiling these responsibility matrix matrices or whatever the plural form is. So there's not just a checkbox. There are four letters I used, maybe normally five, but I started using four. So R for responsible, A for accountable, C for consulted, and I for informed. I propose that this sticks to the same approach as we do in all guidelines. So not just an X, but R, A, C, and I. Any other comments, any other questions? I hope you haven't lost me. Again, okay, if there are no questions, then, yes, it's a rocky, whatever approach, yes. We have it in all the guidelines. Next steps. Stephen. Your proposals for next steps.
With regards to the guideline, I'm going to take the pen back and clean it up and get a version 5 out with the glossary and a draft of the worksheet for Kimbers and have that available by the time people arrive into Abu Dhabi so we can discuss it on the face-to-face, at the face-to-face. So that's where I'm going to be with that. Does that work for everybody?
Certainly works for me. Oh, we're going to have a pretty packed agenda for our face-to-face meeting on Sunday. It looks like it's fine with all others as well, so let's move forward. It's draft icon specific review operating standards. I forwarded the standards to you. We have them, I'll put them in front of you. I've started reading them. Already have a few questions, but still too early for me to comment. Something that first we'll be discussing in during SOAC chairs meeting on Friday. I will participate in that meeting. I'm not sure we discussed that, but as you may know, ESSEC sent a letter to the board and they expressed their concerns with the way of travel of its SSR2 review, its Security, Stability and Resiliency second review. Apparently, they're working for 7 months now, but they still haven't come up with the scope of their work, which they're just, I don't understand, either it looks like they're changing the scope, they have it too broad, sometimes maybe it's not as broad as it should have been. So, as you may remember, we discussed that it's, the scope should be defined before call for volunteers for specific review teams issued by ICANN, so then people could evaluate their abilities and their time commitments better. By now, it has never been the case. Hopefully, well, it looks like operating standards are trying to fix that. They propose to have 12 months before the review is scheduled to start, they propose to establish a group that would work on the scope of the review. So it's kind of pre-review team, also again established by SOSCs, so that team is supposed to come up with the scope, and apparently not more than two members per assault, I think, and on that team. Well, so at least one concern, of course, is being addressed in the operating standards. Haven't read all of them yet, but this is something that we need to do, because we know this. We've studied everything with respect to specific reviews. Of course, we had our own view, and apparently it's not the one that is the currently being adopted, because, well, according to our view, it's, when we worked on our guideline, we expected that the seasons are the ones who issue call for volunteers to select our representatives on the specific review team. Okay, that's not the case, because apparently I can issue a call for all the SOIC. Well, I think logistically it's a good solution. It's not that every SOIC needs to issue its own call. So we need to adjust our guidelines. We all need to read operating standards. And then we must see how if we need to change our guideline, and if we can think of a better way. So maybe we can find something that has not been covered by current drafts. And then if we have any comments, perhaps we, I think we are in the position to comment on the document. The question, of course, is that apparently our group does not have a mandate to submit any comments, but we still can gather feedback and propose it to the Citizens of Council. That's my understanding. I don't know, maybe somebody has already read all the whole document and can comment on it. Bart, anything you'd like to add?
No, thank you, not at this stage. But maybe just one thing, and that's more a procedural point. You're right, it's not in the mandate, but I believe, the council could mandate the group without changing its charter to prepare and submit a comment on the operational standards, and say, given the experience of this group. But that's something for to further discuss in Abu Dhabi and for the council to decide.
Yep. Okay, so thank you. Initial items, concerns for discussion in Abu Dhabi. So apparently we don't have any initial concerns, items and concerns, but this is again another item on our face-to-face agenda, unless of course all time is consumed by our discussion on rejection action. Bart?
Yeah, my suggestion for the working group members would be to look at the operating standards and say there is experience from this group in, drafting and going through these documents, whether they are clear, etc. But also there is experience, say, being a CCTLD related person with some of the specific reviews to date. And I think that experience, if you could match it and map it to the operating standards and check whether it's useful what is proposed, would already be very helpful. For example, the selection process and/or the call for volunteers, etc. Different ways of doing this. There is a specific way proposed in the operating standards. And that the specific way reflects the the method used to date. But for example, if you would look at the CSC and the CSC guideline and how this has been coordinated and run, it's a different method, which could substitute. And finally, and that's relevant as well, in with respect to the operating standard, maybe there's some homework for Abu Dhabi, is does what is included in the text, does it reflect the CCWG workstream one proposal with respect to specific reviews? And again, that's a matter of going through the document. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Bart. I agree with David. There's a lot of reading for Abu Dhabi. Okay, next one. About board nomination guideline. They mentioned we apparently need to update the guideline. I don't know, maybe Jokke as our election nominations manager, nomination manager in this case, would like to say something.
Hello, Katrina. Thank
you.
Well,
one thing is that... Jokke, yes.
Thank you very much. There will indeed be some... recommendations in the nomination report. First of all, regarding the geographical region of the two board members, so that this reflects what is being mentioned in the bylaws. And secondly, there will also be a reference to the additional criteria which are currently not included in the guideline, which is not a problem per se, but since bylaws are of course paramount. However, in the nomination report, I will include an advice to include it in the next version of the revised guideline. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Now, this is something that we'll need to address. Review the guideline and do some changes. Well, not significant changes, some minor changes, but they still need to be properly reflected in the actual text. Okay, then next one. Next is a uniform framework for cross-community working groups. As you know, this cross-community working group that worked on preparing some guidance on how cross-community working groups should be formed, their charters and way of operations and everything. And now there is the framework developed, something that could help us to guide us, the entire process. Any comments on, not sure if you have time to look at it. Bart, maybe you could give some initial comments on up to the group.
I just say the CCNZO was informed by the GNSO support staff. They prepared this for the GNSO itself. They thought it might be helpful. It's a general overview. I just checked it briefly this morning, and it looks good. The only I really checked is whether the change the nature of guideline in the sense of CCNSO, and they didn't. So it might be helpful to look at it. And I think especially page, say the workflow itself, but also the how to utilize and the FAQ is helpful for the broader community. So just need to check again and then see whether it's easy to use. That's all.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bart. And Stephen, very nice comment in the chat window. Yeah, this is something just to look at. Maybe we could spend 5-10 minutes on this in Abu Dhabi as well during our face-to-face meeting. So next agenda item we have is agenda in Abu Dhabi, and we already have some. The first is the most important rejection action guideline. Then operating standards. We should identify some work items. Oh, they are more or less identified, so it's quite clear what we need to work on in the coming month. What if we have some time left? Which I doubt. I'm sure that we have enough to discuss on rejection action and operating standards. Nevertheless, if we have some time left, are there any other topics you'd like to discuss? Bart, please.
May I also suggest that the GRC looks at a initial, because they are right on top of most of the guidelines, we'll look at the take on an initial review of the implementation of the CCNZO review of 2010. I just circulated at the start of this meeting two documents. One was the final report on the implementation of the 2010 recommendations, and secondly, a document which is could be used, and it's just a suggestion on how to conduct an internal review on the implementation of the 2010 recommendation. But may turn this into a work item, whether we have time to do it or just introduce it, but at least for the ongoing, for the upcoming month, as the CCNZO was requested to do the internal review, and it's one of the work items. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Bart. Yes, clearly, as our report to the community showed, this is a preparation for our organizational review is something that we'll have on our plate. We still have time, but not much, so we better start working on this as well. Good. Any other proposals? Okay, if not, then with that, let me... First, thank you for your participation, your active work on all these documents that we have to finalize and present to the community. Then looking forward to seeing you all, apparently not all, because at least Alejandra will not make it to Abu Dhabi, unfortunately. I don't know about others, but you will be. See you all fly in Abu Dhabi during our meeting on Sunday. And with that, let me wish you safe travels, have safe flights, and see you there. So thank you, and bye-bye.